There are some things in life that are certain, aren't there? Like taxes, weddings, funerals. And Aaron, I think tonight we're not going to talk about taxes because nobody wants to talk about that. But I think we'll talk about a funeral and what led to a wedding. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's kind of our version of four weddings and a funeral.
Well, that's right, except that we're on a bit of a budget. So what did you call it when we were chatting before?
One wedding and one funeral.
That sounds good. So what do you say we go to the funeral first, and then we'll make a pit stop, a side stop in Memphis in 1965, and then we'll talk about the events that led up to a pretty famous wedding.
Sounds good to me. Let's rock and roll.
Let's go. Maps?
Check.
Snacks?
Double check.
Tunes?
Check.
I'm Tony Stewart.
I'm Aaron Badgley.
And we are cruising the rock and roll highway in our Wayback Music Machine. Are you ready, my friend?
I sure am.
I have the feeling this is going to be the start of a great adventure.
Kind of a magical mystery tour.
Somehow I knew you were going to say that. So I think, Aaron, we're going to head back to May 14th, 1998. And the world on that day lost a true giant in the music world, didn't they?
They did indeed.
The chairman of the board, old Blue Eyes, Frank Sinatra, found out that he had passed away. So let's punch it in for May 14th, 1998.
1998. Got it.
Good evening. The man whose voice was a familiar and much loved sound in the homes of generations of ordinary people was mourned by them all today. Frank Sinatra closed his famous Blue Eyes for the final time early this morning after a heart attack in a Los Angeles hospital. He was 82. He started singing while waiting on tables at a small American restaurant. He ended having sung to the world. Today it was President Clinton who perhaps summed him up best. He said Sinatra was someone who really did do it his way.
So we made it. Here we are at the Cedars Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, and the world has just found out that Frank Sinatra has passed away from health issues at the age of 82. And what a legacy he left behind. Mm-hmm. Where do you start?
I mean, he was a brilliant actor. I mean, from here to eternity, the man with the golden arm, singer, his voice. He owned Reprise Records.
Well, that's right.
Hendrix, Neil Young, I mean, Joni Mitchell. He was just a friend of the mafia.
Well, that's right. You know, he always denied his mafia ties, but they did. The FBI reports were released after a certain while, and they confirmed that he indeed was pretty well connected in that world. But
don't you think they were just like childhood friends that grew up to be mafia people, and he just kind of went his way?
Well, I don't know, but... Well, you know, I'm Italian, right, on my mother's side. But we have an uncle who we strongly suspect was mafia. We're not positive, but he had to leave North Bay when we were kids, and he was basically never allowed to return and never could talk about it. So,
wow,
very strange. A lot of Italians up there.
Well, you know, I'm half Italian and half Irish, so I'm Canadian, but my dad's from Italy, my mom's from Ireland, so there you go.
Oh, there you go.
But Sinatra, man, do you know what was pretty amazing about him, Tony?
What's that?
Long before Madonna, here's a guy that reinvented himself and stayed relevant from the 30s, late 30s, right through to his passing, really.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He was the father of invention. Boy, like he nonstop, you know, and it's not like his career took off like a rocket either. He struggled for a little while until he found his stride. And it really wasn't until he started singing with the swing bands that his star shone. Boy.
So a little tidbit about Sinatra. I mean, there's so much about him that's interesting. But did you know that he was arrested in 1938?
I heard that. But what was he arrested for?
Well, the first charge he was arrested for, he was 23 years old, and he was arrested and charged with seduction. Now, there was seduction back in the 30s meant that you led women astray, single women astray, and they did things based on the promise you're going to marry them. So he was charged with seduction. But then they found out that this woman was married. So they dropped the seduction charges and charged him with adultery.
That sounds like something out of Austin Powers or something, doesn't it?
Can you imagine in 2021 someone being charged? Yeah, exactly. And someone being charged for adultery in 2020. I mean, you'd arrest all of Hollywood, I'm sure of it. But
oh, well, that's exactly. But his career, you know, he had a lot of things that could have prevented him from becoming as big of a star as he was as well. He had so many health issues as a kid. And he was just a slight figure, too. He was like stick thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we have this image of him, right, as the ladies' man and the. But he suffered with health issues all his life.
Have you ever seen? There's a terrific Christmas special with him and Bing Crosby, and it was filmed, I believe, in 1955. And Bing comes over at the table, the dining room table set, and Bing says, "Is this for me?" And Frank goes, "Well, who else?" And Bing goes, "Well, I assumed you had a girl coming over." And Sinatra's, "Me on a date? Oh, heaven for me." It's really quite funny because he's almost like you know, taken aback that Bing Crosby thinks he's dating some woman. But anyways, you're right. He was the Bobby Soxers. That's where that originated from, wasn't it?
That's right. And before Elvis had hit the teenage girl screaming for him, there were the Bobby Soxers. Now, I did read that his manager helped create the Bobby Sox hysteria. You know, he would pay girls $5 to go and to scream, but still, the whole idea of creating that buzz, and a lot of people absolutely adored Frank Sinatra and thought he was God back in the day, you know. And
my mother was one of them. I think she would have stepped over my father's corpse to get to him. You know, like she loved him so.
Well, my mom too. I mean, I love Sinatra too. I play Frank all the time.
Well, you know, and again, I'm going to go back to the fact that in 1980, the guy puts out a triple album set, which produced by Quincy Jones, by the way.
Yeah, I've got that. I've got that, actually.
That's a great album, right?
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's a stunningly brilliant album. And here, you know, the peak of punk, new wave, disco, and here's Frank in the top 20 with a... you know, American Trilogy type of thing, right? Fantastic guy. And his duets albums. Remember those duets albums?
Yeah, well, that was a precursor to all that whole duet trend that came later.
100%. And I mean, you know, we have them. We bought them. U2's on it, Barbra Streisand, Josh Groban. Yeah, right. He was just this guy that just kept moving with the times. I mean, what can you say? Here's a little known fact. Did you know he released a record on Apple Records?
Did he?
Okay. It's a quick story.
Yeah, all right.
Ringo Starr's wife, Maureen, his first wife, loves Sinatra. So, being a Beatle, he calls up Frank and says, "Can you re-record your Lady as a Tramp and call it Lady as a Champ and dedicate it to Maureen?" So Sinatra records this song and they pressed up one copy on Apple Records. And that was a birthday gift to Ringo's wife. It's on Apple Records, and it's Frank Sinatra singing "The Lady Is a Champ," and it's
and one pressing, and that's it. That's incredible.
I don't have it.
No, I was going to say that would be a little valuable, don't you think?
It's a shame. I'm sure maybe I could Ringo a call, see if he's still, you know, does he want it? I'll take it off his hands. Cheap.
So I have a couple of. Of stories about Sinatra. You know, I'm a big Elvis fan. Like, I'm a huge Elvis fan.
You are indeed.
I always loved the fact that he had Elvis come on his show, and Elvis was really nervous about doing this. You know, this is post-military service and a little bit out of the game, and Frank treated him so respectfully. I remember, you know, listening to an interview with Elvis after that. And he said Frank Sinatra treated him respectfully and had him on the show, treated him as an equal, as a peer. And I mean, Elvis had a fantastic voice and so did Sinatra. So that was a match made in heaven, in my opinion.
Me too, yeah.
You know, but just the fact that here was a guy classy enough to recognize, you know, because I don't think Sinatra was a big rock and roll fan by any stretch of the imagination, but he certainly respected Elvis.
In a certain way, he was passing on the baton, right?
That's right.
Recognizing his time on that level of, you know, being a teeny bopper was over. He was moving on to something else. Hey, Elvis, take over, man, you know?
Yeah, so that, for me, always stood out. I love watching that Elvis appearance on Frank Sinatra. Oh,
it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Well, I mean, there's very little by Sinatra that I can honestly say. You know, I grew up with him. My mom, as I said, you know, if he was on TV, we're watching Frank, you know? I mean, I grew up with him, Bing Crosby, Dean Martin, certainly Elvis. And, you know, that band from Liverpool? So, but I love Sinatra. I mean, I listen to Sinatra. In fact, he did a radio show in the 40s where he played it straight. No music. He didn't sing at all. It's called Rocky Fortune. I mean, that's pretty brave of a guy who was known as a singer.
That's right.
To do a radio show and not sing. I mean, come on. Let's give him credit for that. And I recommend everyone listening, Google Rocky Fortune and listen to a couple of episodes. You will not be disappointed. Great show.
Yeah, very talented guy. Do you have a favorite Frank song or a couple of songs that really stand out for you? I have two.
What are your two?
My two, I absolutely love Come Fly With Me.
Mm-hmm.
Love that one. And I've Got You Under My Skin. Both of those are probably my two favorites, just the ones that I will start humming by default. But absolutely love those songs.
I'm with you on those two. But the other one that I would add to that list that I really love is a later day Frank song called That's Life.
That's Life is fantastic.
I love that song.
So Rick and I play a couple of Frank songs in our sets, and that's one of them is That's
Life.
You
do That's Life?
We do That's Life.
Really? Oh, yeah. I'd love to hear that. That'd be great.
I'll see if I have a recording of it and send it to you. Yeah.
Please. I would love to hear. I love that song.
It's a great song.
Willie Nelson just released a version of it, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
I think Willie's 120 now, but...
That's right.
But he just released a new version of That's Life. I love Sinatra's version of that. And I love, of course, I mean, I love his version of Something. He did a great version of Something.
Yes, he did.
He can't knock it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Beatle covers, but I'm going to go with that one.
Well, and he totally acknowledged that was a brilliant love song. I mean, that's a, mm-hmm. such a fantastic love song.
And it's a great version. He really arranged it beautifully. And I love Frank. In fact, just today I was listening to some Frank Sinatra CDs, just kind of when I was working, I put them on in the background. Love him. So.
Well, you know what? This was a really nice chat and celebration of his life. What do you say we head to Memphis, though, 1965 next?
You don't have to twist my arm to go to Memphis. Anything to get me there, I'm there.
Okay, me too. I love Memphis. So let's do it. Punch it in and let's head to Memphis.
Got it.
All right, here we are, May 12th, 1965, and we're sitting in the parking lot of Stax Records. And this is a pretty momentous recording session, isn't it?
Yeah, this is one for the history books. It really is. And I, full disclosure, anything on Stax, I love it. I love Otis Redding, you know, anyway. So yes, this is a momentous occasion to be here.
Well, especially in the 60s, you know, you had Motown and you had Stax brilliant lineups for both record companies. Boy.
And one of the greatest Stax artists Wilson Pickett, and he's going to record a song that's going to go down in history called In the Midnight Hour.
And In the Midnight Hour is one of my favorite Wilson Pickett songs. What a classic.
I can put it on today and it doesn't sound the least bit dated.
No, exactly.
Those horns? Oh, man.
Well, and speaking of those horns, you know, at the school, when I started the jazz band years ago, I ran it more like a rhythm and blues band. And Midnight Hour was one of the first three or four songs that I introduced the kids to, you know, Soul Man and Midnight
Soul
Hour.
Man, yeah.
So Midnight Hour, In the Midnight Hour has a special place in my heart for sure, too. But what a fantastic song. And this is just a huge recording session.
Oh, yeah. And just about In the Midnight Hour, Roxy Music did a cover of it in 1982 on their Flesh and Blood album. And I'm going to be full disclosure, you know, that's one of the songs that got me into Roxy was their cover of In the Midnight Hour. And again, it doesn't top Wilson Pickett, but look it up. It's a good version.
It is a good version. I was watching it the other day, actually.
Were you really?
Yeah, yeah.
It's good, right? I mean, yeah, Fairies Voice. Is. Yeah, I love it. It's pretty good.
Well, and it's also very faithful to the original. I mean, it's different. It's different, but it's also very faithful to the original at the same time.
Yeah. Well, do you know where the song came from? Like the Wilson Pickett's, inspiration, influence, do you know?
Well, I am guessing it's got to be gospel, right?
That's right. Steve Cropper, said that he heard Wilson singing a song and listened to the same old church stuff he sang on. He was singing, "See My Jesus in the Midnight Hour, See My Jesus in the Midnight Hour." And I said, "I'm going to see my girl in the midnight hour. What about that?" And of course, history is made, right? I mean, I don't know, would it have been as big a hit about seeing Jesus at midnight? I'm not so sure. But you know, go and see your girl in the midnight hour and you got a hit.
Well, for sure. And let's talk about the recording session itself, too, how they did it. This was a straight-off-the-floor recording, wasn't it? Everybody playing at the same time.
Can you believe it? It's live. It's live.
Yeah. I love that. Love that.
It's completely live. And one of the people on the song, Steve Cropper, you know, it was so popular that the Beatles, they wanted to record in that studio because they loved the sound of that song. And unfortunately, it got canceled due to Brian Epstein's had security problems in 1965. I'm guessing they just that they would have been overrun by women, girls screaming. But and me screaming. If I was there, I'd be screaming right along with the girls. So yeah, no. Can you imagine if the Beatles have recorded in that studio? That would be epic. But
oh,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, great time, great song. It stands the test of time.
And it was always that competition, right, between Stax Records and Berry Gordy's Motown Records in Detroit, and just some brilliant music produced by both. What a time!
Oh yeah, and then Towson Atlantic Records too, because they had like the Aretha Franklins, and I mean they had a couple of they were challenging Stax too. So you had the three kind of throwing at this music, which was just unbelievable and unbelievably good.
Oh, for sure.
You like? Are you a fan of Otis Redding at all?
Yeah, I love Otis Redding.
Yeah, me too. It's just one of my favorites. I could just put on Otis Redding all the time. Anyways,
I'm a big fan of all that Motown and Stax era. Love that.
You were just telling me you just saw a rather good documentary on Motown, right? Speaking of Motown.
Yeah, I'll have to look up the title again. I can't remember the title, but it's fantastic, and it's they got Berry Gordy and his name is escaping
Smokey.
Me there. Smokey Robinson. And they're hanging out and visiting the old studio and chatting and telling stories. It's brilliant. Brilliant.
Wow. It's on Netflix, you said, right?
It's on Netflix, so I will send it your way.
And I'm telling you, Tony, as soon as those borders open up, you and I and Cynthia and Andrea, we're heading down to Detroit. You've got to go on the tour. You have to.
I cannot wait. It's on my list. So I'd like to find out what was on the charts that week.
Well, it was an interesting. I'm going to go album charts just because I always find I usually do singles, so this time I'm going to do albums. And again, it's really a hodgepodge of stuff in '65. Number five is Andy Williams with his album Dear Heart, which, by the way, my mom had. Number four, The Beach Boys Today. Number three, this album was on the charts, I think, for the entire decade. Soundtrack to The Sound of Music. I always love that one of The Simpsons where they're driving and a deer runs across the street and Homer goes, "Doe!" And then Marge goes, "A deer!" And then Bart says, "A female deer!" Number two is Herman's Hermits, introducing Herman's Hermits. And number one, Julie Andrews must have been just raking in the dough. Number one was the soundtrack to Mary Poppins.
Oh, wow. I love Mary Poppins. Just my little guilty pleasure. I love that movie.
Do you know what my favorite song is? Chim Chim Cheree.
Oh, Chim Chim Cheree's great. But that's such a fantastic movie. Dick Van Dyke is brilliant in that.
Go ahead, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, the rooftop dancing scene is my favorite.
I was just going to say that. And so it's incredibly choreographed, right? It's just brilliant. I agree. Did you ever see the sequel, the one that just came out with?
No, I want to see it. Though, is it good or?
I haven't seen it. I'd like to have taken my daughters, but they were away and old.
Yeah, well, we'll see if it's Emily Blunt, right? I think I wonder if she's a good replacement for Julie Andrews. I'm very curious, but I'm gonna have to watch that.
Well, maybe when my daughter's home for the summer, we can I'll twist her arm and force her to sit and watch the sequel with me.
That's right.
But you know, I'm digressing a bit here. But there's a good Disney movie called Saving Mr. Banks. Have you seen that with Tom Hanks in it? And
I have not.
Oh, Tony, you have to see this movie. It's great. It's all about how they made Mary Poppins and the pressure they were under for the studio. It's very good. Saving Mr. Banks.
Oh, we'll have to check that one out.
Yeah.
So we've covered the funeral and we have visited this famous recording session at Stax Record. And, you know, everybody loves a love story. And I think we should go to May 15th, 1967 and talk about one of rock and roll's greatest love stories. What do you think?
I think it's, if not one, it's not one of, I think it's the greatest love story in rock and roll history. I do, I really do. But yeah, I'm with you. Now that we figured out how to cross the Atlantic easily.
But yes.
Wait, you know, I'm telling you, unleaded makes it all the difference, man.
Well, and the premium stuff. I, you know, ever since that little mishap a few episodes ago, I have been putting premium in all the time. So, all right, punch it in. Let's head across the pond, and let's go to 1967, May 15th.
We're in.
Mary Ann Lynch took off at 7:45 a.m., flew 2,949 miles, made 3 stops. And most of the trip still lies ahead. Now there are schedules to check, flight reports to make, a quick supper with friends before turning in. Next morning, on the go again at 6:15, then St. Louis, Cincinnati, finally New York. Glamour job, Mary Ann has made dozens of runs like this, served hundreds of hot meals, greeted thousands of new people. It all demands a lot of charm. And works out to a lot of Coke. Does Coca-Cola have the taste you never get tired of? Do we mean it when we say Coke is always refreshing? Is things go better with Coke after Coke after Coke just a slogan? Write Miss Mary Ann Lynch, Transworld Airlines, Box 7144, St. Louis, Missouri. She'll tell you.
So here we are, Tony. We're parked in front of a place called the Bag O' Nails, which was a live music club in London, in Soho, actually. And this is a place where people like Georgie Fame and Jimi Hendrix and Eric Burdon and the Animal, they play here. And it's also the Beatles' favorite club. But what's special about this particular place and this particular day in 1967, which, you know, was May the 15th, is Paul McCartney meets a photographer named Linda Eastman. They meet for the first time here in the Bag O' Nails Club. And it's kind of love at first sight. And I mean, what can you say? I think that the Paul and Linda McCartney story, I just think it's phenomenal.
I mean, I do too. And I 100% agree with you that this has got to be rock's greatest love story and most enduring. And they spent very little time apart too, didn't they?
11 days. I mean, once Linda moved in with Paul, they spent 11, and that was only when she went into hospital to give birth to their children. And that, by the way, for those of you who don't know, that's where the name Wings came from. Did you know that?
No.
So when Linda was giving birth to their second child, the very famous Stella McCartney in her own right, very famous, there was complications. And they took McCartney out of the room and said, "You got to stay here, man." And McCartney prayed and prayed and prayed. And he had a vision of an angel coming down. He saw the wings of the angel. And the angel said, "It's going to be okay." He thought that was important, so he said, "Wings, that's the name of our band, Linda." And that's where the name Wings came from, which is it's a touching story to me, you know?
Well, for sure, you know, and of course she was involved in Wings. She played in Wings with Paul. And
he took a lot of criticism for that, too.
Did she ever? I think people were in the back of their minds thinking, "Oh, God, here we go. It's Yoko Ono all over again," right? But
kind of, yeah.
But who was... There was a famous singer who actually talked to Linda after a show and complimented her and said, "You know, like you're doing a lot better than you think you are." And I don't remember who it was. Do you know who that was?
No, I know who you're talking about. My mind just went blank, but I remember her talking about that in an interview. Paul or Linda said about an interview, and it was a very famous artist, and he was quite complimentary about her. She always downplayed her ability to play keyboards.
Yeah.
But you know, that solo, the synthesizer solo in Band on the Run, that's pure Linda. She wrote that. I mean, that's a great solo. You know?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite Wings songs, actually. It's fantastic.
It's brilliant. I mean, this is a couple that endured it all. And, I mean, you know the song My Love was written by Linda. Do you know what's special? Do you know the funny story about My Love?
No.
McCartney wanted to record it like stacks. He wanted to do it in one take. So they hired this big orchestra. He's got his band Wings. And just minutes before they're going to record the song, the lead guitarist at the time, Henry McCulloch, leans over and says, you know what? I'm going to change the solo. Like, I know we've practiced one solo, but I'm going to change it. Paul's like, oh, okay. Thanks, Henry. And they did it in one take. That song is done live off the floor with the orchestra, everything, you know?
In one take.
One take of My Love. And that song went on to become one of his biggest hits. I mean, number one around the world, right?
Yes, huge. You know, I remember talking to, this is a little bit off topic here, but it's about orchestras and recording sessions. Mm-hmm. So when you take a Disney movie, now this would have been, gosh, maybe 2011. I was speaking with a Disney professional, musician, a trumpet player who played in, you know, all these big movies like The Lion King. And you know how much it cost back then, even like in 2011, for 1 minute of orchestra time in a recording session?
Oh, wow. It was
$10,000 a minute.
A minute? Are you serious?
$10,000 a minute was the cost for that orchestra to be there. You know, he said, like, you don't make mistakes in this gig. Like, you just don't. You can't. And
so now I have to say McCartney's kind of,
Yeah, it's so pricey, right? Because these orchestras that you're getting in, they're all members of the union. And you've got to pay union scale.
Oh, of course. Of course. Well, I didn't know that. That's a good gig.
Yeah. So he said you got to be perfect for that.
And let's face it. I mean, you don't get much more perfect than a Disney. I mean, Disney soundtracks are classic, right? I mean, Lion King is a good example, or Aladdin, or hell, go back to the, you know, 50s and 60s or, you know, bare necessities.
Well, that's right.
But, you know, McCartney supported Linda, the photography, her vegetarian, her cookbooks, the frozen veggie meals you can buy in England and the States. It was a lovely relationship, and they met that one night. And then she was invited to the Sgt. Pepper launch in June. And she took that very famous photo of Paul and John with their thumbs up holding the album cover. It's very famous. And, she's a... And what can I say? It's a great love story and some great love songs. And on the Spotify playlist, I put a song called The Lovely Linda, which he wrote on his first solo album. It's only a minute and 12 seconds, but well worth your time. So,
yeah, you know, they were a relationship of equals in terms of how they treated each other and incredible. Yeah. I love hearing stories about Paul and Linda. And he must have been so devastated when she passed, eh? Like, I can't imagine.
I just think that, he talked about getting counseling and his son moved back in with him. 11 days. I mean, he was with her when she passed away. He stayed with her the entire time. Like, there was never, you know, that was just wasn't a consideration. And I'm going to be honest, Tony, kind of a role model for me and Andrea. Like, I looked at that relationship and I thought, that's how it should be.
That's right. But,
mind you, Ringo and his wife just celebrated 40 years. They had an anniversary. Barbara Bach, 40 years. So.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, it's true love is there, you know. But so a great love story that had I don't want to say a sad ending. It had a great ending because they were together and they made it work. And I mean, as I said, both of them took criticism for her playing in the band. And there's a great book, though, called Paperback Writer, which is an alternative universe about the Beatles. And it's very funny. It's about the Beatles getting back together again in the late 70s. And Paul says to Linda, look, I'm really sorry, but the band wants to get together. She goes, oh, great. I was going to tell you this anyway. Steely Dan wanted me to join their band. I always thought that was funny.
Well, that's right. Well, you know, when we looked at the This Week in Rock and Roll History, we were looking for what we were going to visit, and this one popped up, and I thought, like, we have to do the love story because everybody needs a good love story to concentrate on, and this was the biggest.
Well, and let me just do a quick rundown of the top five albums that week, and it's, again, Tony, help me out here.
For sure.
Number five is Dr. Zhivago soundtrack. What's with these soundtracks? Number four, Ed Ames, My Cup Runneth Over. The Love and Spoonful, the best of which had a song that Paul McCartney, that influenced Paul McCartney, What a Day for a Daydream.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote A Good Day Sunshine after hearing that. The Mamas and the Papas, Deliver, and More of the Monkeys at number one.
Oh, wow.
Sound of Music, number six. And The Temptations, you were talking about Motown earlier, and The Temptations had an album at number 11, which was a live album, and they were at number nine with their greatest hits. And I'm sorry, I found it really funny that Mantovani and Lawrence Welk were in the top 100. Anyways.
My grandfather was a big Lawrence Welk fan. My grandma. Yeah, I grew up on a pretty steady diet of Lawrence Welk, you know, a one and a two.
And the bubbles? All the bubbles.
You know, that was his license plate, eh? Did you know that? A1.
No, are you serious?
Yeah, A1 and A2. Yeah, yeah.
No. Oh, I'd love to see. I'm going to Google that. I'm going to see a picture. That's hilarious. I mean, he was what he was.
Well, somehow we went from Paul and Linda McCartney to Lawrence Welk. To me, since we said the words Lawrence Welk, I think it's time for us to jump to the present. And I guess you've got a song for me, don't you?
I've got a song for you this week. I do indeed.
Okay, so punch in 2021 and let's head home. And I'm waiting with bated breath.
Here we go.
Well, that was pretty sweet, and thank you for that, actually, and I do mean that. That was really cool, but I'll let you explain what I was listening to.
Well, I don't know if the kids are listening to it, but it is number one this week on the Billboard Jazz Song Chart. It's a guy named Dave Koz with Paul Jackson Jr., and a song called Dr. Norm. So I thought, you a jazz guy, a horn guy, you might like it. So there you go. I don't mind it. I thought it had a good groove to it.
No, I loved it, and couple things. I mean, nobody out there listening to this podcast is going to have any idea about what I'm talking about right now, but it reminded me a lot of an album that a guy named Eddie Daniels did about 20 years ago. Good vibe, tasteful playing. I'm going to tell you, you know, my tastes in jazz run very old school. Like I am, you know, the 30s and the 40s. I can't stand bebop. I think I admire bebop for the technical prowess you have to play that kind of music, but it is a very self-indulgent type of jazz, and in my opinion, that's when jazz started to lose relevance, was in the bebop era, because it was all of a sudden it went from being this music meant for listening and dancing into something totally different, and something that became way too intellectual for the average person, and strayed too far from its roots. That's just my opinion. But this was very cool. And a couple of things I picked up on is during his solo, he quoted Miles Davis, which I love. He quoted a song called Four by Miles Davis. And I heard it right away. I was like, oh, wow.
So, I thought you articulated that very well, quite frankly. I thought you expressed yourself remarkably well about bebop. Just saying.
Well, it's just it strayed from what it was supposed to be. And there's all kinds of theories about why that happened. But, Miles Davis was one of the ones who rebelled against that. And he said, no, this, like, he, you know, with his push towards playing cool jazz instead, because he had been a bebop player for a while too, but it became too much. I can't, like, if I go to a jazz gig now and I see somebody just up there shredding, I'll last about 2 minutes. It belongs in the practice room. You know, I'm the same with a rock and roll show. I don't mind a guitar solo that's a couple of minutes long, but if someone's going to be overindulgent and, you know, shred for 20 minutes up there, like that stuff is great for the practice room, but not so great for audiences, you know?
It's like those 20-minute drum solos from the prog rock days. Like, okay, you can play the drums.
Yeah, yeah, and just a little bit self-indulgent, you know? But great choice. Thanks for that.
You're welcome. And you mentioned Miles Davis. I was watching a concert, an old concert from, I don't know what year it would be, 1990.
You talk 80s. About a guy who reinvented himself.
Well, this concert is 87 with Prince. And he just comes on during Prince's encore, and he just, you know, it's Prince and Miles Davis. It's pretty damn cool, right?
Oh, and Miles reinvented himself so many times, and, you know, the most influential jazz musician in history, in my opinion. I mean, he just steered jazz in a ton of different directions, and the epitome of cool. What a guy.
And, you think, and, you think he was cooler than Perry Como?
Oh, yeah. And you know what? Since we said Perry Como, I think it's time to end our road trip here. What do you think? This is a great one, eh? I really enjoyed talking about
it. I thought it was, yeah, it was fun. It was, and good driving, man. Really good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, yeah. I've been working on it. And, you know, the premium gas is paying off, so.
It's showing. It's showing. Trust me, it's showing.
Oh, there we go. Well, I guess we will see you next week. But as always, it was a pleasure, sir. And we're pulling up to your place now. So say hi to Andrea for me.
And you give my best to Cynthia and take good care.
You too. See you next week, man. Music for today's episode of the Wayback Music Machine podcast was written by Rick Denis. The show notes, chart selection, and Spotify playlist were created by Aaron Badgley.
And the artwork, recording, editing, and sound production was done by Tony Stewart. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to tell a friend or two. And don't forget to click follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast player to get the latest episodes automatically.
And we'd love it if you would leave us a review. You can also engage with the show by going on our website and leaving us a voicemail. We may even play your voicemail on an upcoming episode.
Thanks for taking this road trip with us, and we'll see you next time on the Wayback Music Machine podcast.
Hey, turn the radio up. I love this song. The Wayback Music Machine podcast is a Stewie Tunes production.